This is the Book Club at 91.7 on WVXU and WMUB. I'm Mark Purcell. Thanks for listening. And I guarantee over the next few minutes that you will probably begin to feel very, very hungry. I know I have been very hungry reading the book we're about to talk about, 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, A Food Lover's Life List. This new book is from Mimi Sheraton, a journalist, James Beard Award-winning cookbook author, and the former restaurant critic of the New York Times. And in the very beginning, Mimi makes it clear this is almost an autobiography. It gives me great pleasure to welcome Mimi Sheraton to the Book Club at 91.7. Good morning, Mimi.
Good morning, Mark. I'm very pleased to be with you, and thank you very much.
You say in the introduction of the book that this is almost an autobiography, and you mention you've been working on it for a long, long time. Exactly how long has it been in compiling 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die?
The actual work on the book was 10 years, not only in compiling the list, which was relatively simple, but finding sources for all of the ingredients that, or the dishes that would be reliable. But in a wider range, it's been 60 years that I have been traveling the world, writing about food, discovering things, and that is why I say it's somewhat of an autobiography, because I've made so many friends and had so many experiences and learned so much that I could use in my own life. Just going out doing research on food for various articles for the Times or Vanity Fair or the Condé Nast Traveler or the New Yorker and so on. And it all added up to my life. And I think food is a kind of handle by which you can pick up a culture. And that is why in 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, we divided it geographically. Not by the country name, but by, I guess, what is the adjective? Not France, but French. Not Italy, but Italian, because some of the versions are available, say, here. So it would not be in France, but it would be French. And it covers the world. 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die takes you to Africa and the Silk Road and all kinds of places. I wanted people to get an idea of what the world eats. And so there are some very humble, inexpensive things, such as frozen Milky Way and very well-made potato chips or popcorn, as well as caviar, foie gras, truffles, etc.
It is a spectrum of food from all around the globe. And you mentioned, you know, having it French instead of France, but you are certain throughout the book, 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, to also highlight what you call the food of the world, those things that have become global. And I imagine that was very important to you.
Well, they are. You know, there are certain herbs and certain nuts and certain other ingredients that you could not really ascribe to one area. What does happen, however, is they do very different things with them. And so while the ingredient is not credited to a place, dishes made including it are given their ethnic labels.
I noticed as well, and you explain in the beginning, that this is not just 1,000 foods. You also talk about movies and places. You talk about markets and talk about books. It's really food in its many facets.
Well, I think I've been inspired to try many dishes because of the way they seemed in literature, in a book. For example, there is a classic, The Oysters of Loch Mariaquay by Eleanor Clark, which is a marvelous read about Brittany oysters, their history, and how they are raised. And I propose one going to a midwinter vacation when oysters are at their best because the waters are cold. And going to an inn in Brittany and walking on the beach wearing a heavy sweater and eating oysters a couple of times a day. There are also films such as The Cook, The Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover that have inspired meals. A great work by the Italian futurist artist Marinetti called The Futurist Cookbook, in which he proposes what Italians should eat for the coming era of lightness, of aluminum trains and flying and he doesn't think Italians should eat pasta. fortunately, they didn't listen to him.
I did read that section in the book, and that made me laugh out loud when he said you shouldn't eat pasta.
But I think he sort of foresaw molecular cooking. A lot of the things in his book, I think, might appeal to some of the so-called molecular chefs.
I'm speaking with Mimi Sheraton. Her new book is 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, a food lover's life list. And as you just heard, it's not only about food. There are some recipes in there, but you also learn about famous restaurants and places to go, the food at Harrods in London or the markets of Palermo. 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. And I wanted to touch on some of these foods. Many are familiar, Mimi, and I loved learning about some of the history behind some of these foods, but also discovering foods that I hadn't heard of before. Bread fried in bacon grease, something that is Irish in origin. Wow.
That comes from Frank McCourt's wonderful autobiography called Angela's Ashes. And his mother, Angela, who was very poor and often not sober, couldn't get much food together for her kids. And this was one of her go-to items, bread fried in bacon grease. I had the privilege of meeting Frank McCourt when we were on a panel together, and I asked him if he ever misses the dish. And he said he prepares it for himself about 3 times a year. So I think that, you know, what Cinnamon Toast is to us, perhaps bread fried in bacon grease to him. Also, there's some, I hope, interesting information on the origin of dishes. For a while, since the very unique Cincinnati chili is not a separate entry, its entire history is explained under the Greek dish pastitsio, which is a kind of Greek lasagna made with small pasta and layers of lamb and a sauce. And it was a Greek who developed the chili in Cincinnati, adapting the combinations of pastitsio to the format that you now see it in. And a number of years ago, I was in Cincinnati trying the chili because it sounds very strange to us. Chili on spaghetti is really... And the only place where I really loved it, where because the ingredients were so good, the quality of the cheese was so good, was Camp Washington.
Mm-hmm.
I really did like the place so much, and I thought, well, you see, there's a right way and a wrong way to do everything. And I thought Camp Washington had it right. Do you like it?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Live and die by it, and it was something that I inherited from my father, who's been eating Camp Washington chili for nigh on 50-plus years now.
So. I understand that. with everything?
Oh, yes. With everything and more, and a couple of conies on the side, too. So.
It's a lovely place. I like the whole look of it, too, and it wasn't a chain, so that gave it a certain individuality.
You mentioned a frozen Milky Way a little bit earlier. I was also kind of taken aback when I was in the Scottish section of 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, and I ran across a deep-fried Mars bar. In Scotland?
In Scotland. They invented it, and of course they've been excoriated for it by all sorts of health enthusiasts.
Of course.
But it became a rage throughout the British Isles and is especially prepared at fish and chips restaurants. There's one right around the corner from me here in Greenwich Village in New York, fish and chips, and they do fried Mars bars. I guess they have that big vat of hot fat, and they throw everything they can find into it. But there's a strange appeal as the chocolate melts and the caramel gets a little soft. My first two choices when I knew I was going to do the book was frozen Milky Ways and caviar. And I think that defines the range in terms of ordinary, inexpensive, and very expensive exotic luxury.
I want to talk about the caviar again in just a moment, but let me remind everybody that you're listening to Mimi Sheraton on the Book Club at 91.7. Her book in bookstores now is 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, A Food Lover's Life List, and what a list it is. And you mentioned caviar, and I noticed in the Russian section something I hadn't run across before. Of course, you talk about beluga caviar in the Russian section, but you talk about vegetable caviar, the poor man's caviar, caviar from turf, not surf.
Right. Throughout Eastern Europe, especially around Romania, Hungary, they call it ikra, which is the Russian Slavic word for caviar, but they also make it out of eggplant, just cooked down, you know, a kind of spread. And I guess it's poor man vegetarian caviar.
But
also had a version done with mushrooms, but that's not as convincing. I mean, none of it is convincing, but at least but at least eggplant has the moisture. And, you know, the depth of flavor, and you can kind of understand that. Just as there is the Jewish specialty of chopped chicken liver, there is a vegetarian chopped liver made with sautéed mushrooms and onions and hard-boiled eggs.
I want to talk about one other thing. I know we're running short on time. We'll get to the world's best mashed potatoes in just a moment. But I wanted to talk, you had mentioned about the origins of food, and that's what I've learned a lot in reading 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, about where some of these recipes came from. And one that stuck out was that one-pot winter stew that was a spoil of war. Was it France or Spain, where the retreating army left behind a pot with some leftovers in the bottom, and it became all the rage in the area. Hush pot. Or, is that right? I can't remember.
It was Belgium.
Belgium, okay.
Holland or Belgium. I'm now looking through, but I think it was one of those. And they found the pots. In fact, the first pot that they found is in a museum. And I do say in the book, I hope they've washed it since. It was Spanish soldiers that occupied the Dutch town of Leiden in 1574, and they were driven out so rapidly, so unexpectedly, that they left unwashed pots. And the Dutch found remains of meat and vegetable stew in it, and so they decided to start from that and make their own version. And they had, you know, being very cold, damp countries, they welcomed this kind of stew, and it became classic, and the pot is in a museum, as I say, hopefully washed.
It's
called in Leiden's Museum de Lakenhal in the town of Leiden, which is also famous for a particular cheese.
Fascinating information about cheeses throughout as well, the cheeses from the different countries, and I enjoyed your descriptions of some of the stinkier cheeses, shall we say. Also, it seems that every culture has some version of pizza, and potatoes play a big role too, and I wanted to talk about what you call the world's best mashed potatoes from France. Wow.
Aligot, it's called. And they're whipped usually equal weight in potato and butter. But then what makes them special is the whipping in of the special cheese of the Auvergne. And as they whip it, usually if it's a really good, serious place, they do it right beside the table. And as they pull the whip out of these potatoes that they're really whipping more than mashing, it gets stringy like melted mozzarella, and then the whole thing goes back into it. It's quite unbelievable. It comes with sausages and things, but believe me, it could stand alone.
Well, a wonderful collection, Mimi. Thank you for sharing. I think I'm going to have to add a few items to my food lover's life list myself after reading your book, and appreciate all the insight that you provide.
Thank you so much. It was lovely being with you.
Mimi Sheraton. Her book is 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, A Food Lover's Life List. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. And also learn more about Mimi and her work on our website. The Book Club at 91.7. I've got to go get a snack.